Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima.
The new book, The State of Play, The Old School Guide to New School Baseball. Bill Ripken, you know him, you love him, you've seen his baseball card. I'm sure that's going to get brought up. Bill, thanks for joining us today, my friend.
What's going on, guys?
Nothing much. First off, can you tell us about the book and everything that goes into this book?
Well, sure. I think I put it to paper simply because over the past few years there's been so much conversation swirling around the metrics of the game, the new school, the analytics. And I think people have lost sight that old school baseball people like myself have always used numbers and information to come up with a plan. Just because something now can be measured, or something now can have this cute little name, or something now has a three-lettered statistical category to it and it sounds cool, doesn't necessarily make any of it new and doesn't necessarily make any of it relevant to today's game.
Go ahead, Anthony.
Well, then I'm curious if, you know, this old school mentality about the game, and I know we got a lot of gatekeepers in every sport that try to preserve the nostalgia that might have been there for the sport before them. But now what I hear a bunch of people from a little older generation say about today's game, they all say this game is boring right now. It is only strikeouts. It's only home runs. Gone are, you know, the fun things like stolen bases and advancing runners and relay throws and everything that goes into it. Do you agree with that?
Well, I'm not going to necessarily bah humbug everything, but I will say this, that some of the claims that the new school talks about being this game is completely different. I think what you just pointed out is some of the things the new school did bring into the game was their thought process that a strikeout was just an out. And therefore, that turned into more swings for the fences, meaning more home runs. The walk seems to be, you know, ever prized in the new school thinking. But if you sit there and think about the true three outcomes that they talk about, walk, homer, or strikeout, that is a very boring thing. So if the new school is going to claim those three things coming into the game, the new school is going to have to share some of the burden and responsibility for the game not being as exciting as it once was.
So they have tried to rectify this with some different rules. One of the things they're talking about doing, and it was supposed to come to fruition this year, but we'll see what happens depending on the schedule and how taxed the arms are going to be. But this three-batter minimum, there are also a bunch of people that surround the game now that want the shift to be outlawed. I mean, do any of these make sense to you?
Well, first let me talk about the shift. I don't think the shift needs to be outlawed because I don't think the shift works near as well as people say it does. And when I say people say it does, I think there's a propaganda state going on in the game where if you watch a broadcast and there's a rocket hit to short right field and the second baseman's out there, the announcer will say, well, that's been a hit for 100 years, but not anymore because the defense was well positioned. But if a ball rolls through the vacant spot at shortstop and rolls into left field for a knock, it's something said like, well, it just found a hole. The BABIP, which is a new school terminology, the batting average on ball put in play, since 2012, when the shift gone crazy started, till now, the ball put in play, the average on the ball put in play is the exact same as it was since there was 4,000 overshifts in 2012 and 40,000 overshifts in 2019. So if the BABIP, the ball put in play, the average is identical to back in 2012, how can the shift necessarily work? If it takes one away from somebody, it's given something to somebody else. So I'm not a fan of saying you have to outlaw the shift, because I watch the shift on a nightly basis get burned, and it doesn't seem to be talked about that much.
I don't understand why that seems to be such a problem with that. I know that people bring about talk about fairness, but then I think, isn't that just, Bill, isn't that just a question of the hitter, or a challenge to the hitter to be able to step up there and maybe you hate this term, but just say, hey, be a hitter. Get a ball through and make them change the way they defend you when you're up there at the plate.
It absolutely is an indictment on the hitter. And it may take 40 points from somebody that doesn't want to conform, but if the BABIP is the same, it might give 2 points to 20 other people, because that's why the BABIP is a push. Anthony Rizzo, Cody Bellinger, Freddie Freeman. These were the guys that the overshift was designed for, big left-handed power hitters. Their career average when the overshifts played against them is higher than their career average when it's played normal. So those guys probably wish the overshift was played against them all the time, because they would be better for it. I remember Anthony Rizzo a couple years back, first time up, they played the overshift, he bunted down the third baseline, knock. Second time up, he bunted, third baseline, knock. He's 2 for 2. The third time he comes to plate, they played him straight up. So it is an indictment on the hitter that's not willing to take what's given to him.
Bill Ripken joining us on the show, author of a new book, doing a lot of good stuff with baseball, former baseball player in his own right, brother Kyle. We'll talk about that coming up here in a moment. I think your career started, you did not play for Earl Weaver, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, but you were still, I would imagine you were still in the system. Your brother did play for Earl Weaver. For him, it was always like, well, pitching and 3-run home runs. Would he like the style of baseball that's being played right now, or is that a misconception?
Well, I don't think he would like sending Jim Palmer out there to throw one inning and then take him out and bring in somebody else behind him. You know, Earl was a guy, you know, and if you talk about old school, it certainly falls into place with Earl. But Earl always used information. He just didn't have them, you know, in computer spreadsheets printed out to him. He didn't have iPads in the dugout. He had his little research department in his office, which was him. He would look through box scores. He would play back his personal memories of what he had seen. And my brother told me, because I did not play for Earl, but he said when it was late in the game, he could get Terry Crowley or Benny Ayala up to home plate pinch hitting off the weakest reliever in their bullpen. And however he manipulated that or did it, and that was all about strategy and plan. So I don't know if Earl would like some of the things going on in the game, but he definitely liked the 3-run homer. There was no question about it. But he rode his starting pitchers beyond belief. And if we go back in the day, the Orioles had 4 20-game winners in 1 year. We will never, ever see that again. So I think some of the things he would be okay with, but his terminologies and the new terminologies probably wouldn't mix that much.
Hey, Bill, I'm curious what you think about how baseball would look with no fans to start out the season, and whether you think that would impact the way the game is played, how it would look, any of the strategy. What do you think?
Well, I don't think it would be good necessarily, but I think in certain situations and under, you know, these situations that we're in, it might be a necessity to start with if they really want to get the games in. If you could think about a spring training game, and I certainly played in enough of those, but I also played in a few B games that started at 10 in the morning where there was no fans in there. That is a hard time to get things going. It's hard enough climbing up on 95 miles an hour if you don't have any adrenaline going. And there's something about the fans and the crowds that when they're in place and they're pulling for you and the excitement is there, it makes the game a little bit easier. So watching a game on TV with no fans in, it's definitely going to be spooky. But if it happens, I think it's going to be just out of necessity alone. And hopefully we can get everybody out to the ballpark at some time this year to watch a game.
What do you think is a reasonable amount of time for players to prepare for the upcoming season if they get restarted here?
Well, I would suspect if they start this thing, and I'm just throwing out, you know, random things, but let's say this thing starts in July. I would say 2 weeks before that new targeted opening day, spring training would start. Position players pretty much need 2 weeks, I believe. These guys are in good shape. They work out. They're going to be hitting the whole time. They need to see a few live pitches, get some at-bats, but they'll be ready to go in 2 weeks. I would suspect if that happened, the expanded roster would happen. They'd be carrying more pitchers. We would see short outings by pitchers. But I would think 2 weeks should be enough time to get everything rolling. And maybe I'm on the quick side of that. I've heard a lot of people say they need 4 weeks. Maybe it'll fall at three. But I think position players just need 2 weeks.
Bill, as you look at the landscape in Major League Baseball right now, the Boston Red Sox, and it's weird to actually talk baseball now, but Boston Red Sox got rid of Mookie Betts. They had their financial reasons. And the Indians, it's pretty clear that Francisco Lindor is not going to finish his career with the Cleveland Indians. How devastating do you think that is that the best players on these teams that they've seen develop can't stay with these teams?
Well, it does seem to be the nature of the beast right now. And, look, I would not want to lose Frankie. I would not want to lose Mookie. I get it and understand it. I think somehow, some way, that these teams moving forward are going to make a hard effort to lock up some of these players at the two-year mark. And when I mean a hard effort, I think they're going to try to make it worth their while to say that. I know teams have done that before, and I believe Frankie was offered something maybe a couple years back. But I think as far as ownership's concerned, if you look at the top dollar that's being paid out there to some of the players, and I could mention Bryce Harper and Manny Machado and Mike Trout, those three players weren't in the playoffs last year. So I'm sitting there, there's part of me that thinks you need to have some money to spend on some other people. And if you start locking up these guys, and that's not to say Frankie and Mookie ain't going to get their money and be that top player, and the situation might work out, but I'm thinking at that four-year mark, that might be the best time for these teams to start moving players, because that's going to be your best haul back, because whoever gets them for 2 years instead of one. So I think that four-year number moving forward is going to be one of those magic numbers.
Bill Ripken joining us on the show. He's the author of a new book, State of Play, The Old School Guide to New School Baseball, was released just in February, and looks very, very good. Now, Bill, this is the first time we've had you on. If we have you on again, I'm not going to ask you again, I promise, all right? But let me ask you, tell us about the card. Tell us about the card and everything that went into the baseball card, because it's obviously very famous.
Well, here's the deal. Since the new school against the old school in the book, I'll give you both schools on this. There's something out there called the Google, and the story is out there, and it's real. You just have to find the right article. The old school in me refers back to my father and says something about, son, that was 30 years ago, dude. You don't need to talk about that anymore. So I'm giving you the old school and the new school in the same sentence on that one.
All right, I'll go ahead and I'll look it up. Okay, so where does now – I don't know where you hold your brother in terms of shortstops, but in the generation, where does Omar Vizquel rank in the 90s, early 2000s in that generation?
I used Omar in my conversations in teaching youth baseball with infielders, not so much to do everything on the run like Omar did, because I think there was some things that he took some chances and some risks because he had the capabilities and the physical attributes to do it. But what I always pointed out about Omar Vizquel is Omar's hand position, his glove hand, got further out in front of his body than most infielders. You'll see sometimes that a ball might bite an infielder because his hands start to get too close to his body, and that kind of ties him up. Omar, every day that I watched him, and I was playing in Cleveland at the end of that year in 1995 and saw him from that dugout, but every other time I played against him, if he came in and made a play, his hand position was in such a good position that sometimes that ball would take a tricky hop and Omar would be able to catch it because his hand was out in front of his body and his eyes saw the ball and he trusted himself. So maybe some of the stuff that Omar did on the run I don't teach, because that's a individual thing and a special thing that he could do. But I can teach and can talk about his hand positioning was so good that he caught that little in-between hop or that little bad hop much better than every other shortstop I saw play.
Bill, fantastic. Thank you very much for the time. Again, the book by Bill Ripken, The State of Play, The Old School Guide to New School Baseball. Plenty of time to read it right now. Hopefully plenty of people go out and get it. Bill, thank you very much for the time.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Ripken on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I had to ask the question, Anthony. I had to ask him about the card.
Oh, that was fine. I was curious if he was going to – I've heard him answer it in different ways before.
Yeah.
So he didn't want to give it up there.
Well, what is the story? Because I don't know the story. Now I got to actually go back and Google the story about what actually happened. I know – did he tell it to Bull and Fox like a year or two ago?
Yeah, I can't remember when he came on during the playoffs or something. Maybe it was 2 years ago, and I think he told the story. But I don't actually remember the story. I just remember he was having a great time telling it, and in this case, he wanted nothing to do with it.
Well, I had to ask. Am I not supposed to ask the question about the card?
No, that's fine.
I got to ask him the card question. I mean, it's a famous baseball card. Just, I got to throw that out there. I'm sorry. Had to do it. Also, he is right about what he says about Omar. My buddy's dad used to complain constantly because my buddy, his dad coached his older brother's team, and my dad coached our team. And he would argue, or he would complain, because the kids at shortstop and second base were trying to do Omar stuff.
No, you could never try to play the game like him.
They would try to barehand it and stuff like that. And he's like, "Yeah, Omar's a great player, but these kids are idiots. I can't deal with this." So we get upset about something like that. 216-578-0092. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll update the Would You Rathers. And the NCAA's come up with a pretty good idea for next year's spring athletes and next year's fall athletes. We'll get to that. And also the 16 must-watch games while you're in quarantine of the Cleveland Browns. It's Ken Carman with Anthony Lima, live with the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.